Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, August 26, 2013. We're going to be talking about the Middle East today. We're going to be talking about Syria. We're going to be talking about your finances, and of course, we'll be talking about gold. But first, let's get to the market reports today. A quick recap of the metals today, commodities today. Gold had a nice little turnaround today. It was pressured all day, but up $4.80 at $14.03.60. Silver's up 24 cents at $24.42. Platinum up $8 at $1,551, along with palladium down 5 at $751. The USDX today is no change there, 0.01 to the downside, 81.36. Same thing with crude oil, pretty much unchanged, 106.25. Light trading today, low volume in the stock market today. Let's get to those markets. The Dow dropped about 64 points. 14,946. The NASDAQ basically flat, 36.57. S&P down 6 points at 16.56. The 10-year yield, a little change there. 2.80% on the 10-year yield, down 0.01. If you have any questions for today's program, you can email us questions@dgscoins.com. That is questions@dgscoins.com. And if you have a telephone and you want to call in for a question, 800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody. Interesting day, big day, broke 1,400.
1,400, how about that?
Yo, yo, yo.
People, wake up.
Gold is running again.
Running again. Why don't you wait till, you know what, Al? They'll be running in at 1,700. And I'll be hearing all day long, man, I wished I would have got in at 1,300. I wished I would have gotten in silver at, you know, $20 instead of 30 and 35, 40 and 50. Now's your chance, folks.
The question is not where you should have bought in.
And you're right.
The question is, how high is it going to go?
Go. You're right.
That's the point. And as long as there is a considerable There's reason to believe that it's going to rise considerably. Well, it's time now. It's time to buy. It might have been better to buy a week ago, a month ago, you know, a year ago. But nevertheless, now it's time to buy as long as it's going up.
And that was what I was trying to make. You know, you can't time the markets. What we know today, we didn't know. It's hindsight, and you're right. You need to get in when you can get in, because what is your alternative? The future is bleak for our finances, for our financial system, not just here in the States, but really around the world. Everybody points to China. Everybody points to various countries and places to run, places to put your money in, and places where you can be safe and get into paper, because this is going to go up 300% and 500% over gold. I don't think you can chase things anymore. You can't chase these promises of guaranteed safety and privacy.
No.
I mean,
no,
you've got thing. There is no such thing. The closest thing you'll ever have to what you're looking for is with physical gold and silver. And
yeah, that's, you know, it's just, again, unstable times, difficult times. You know, I had a little cabin burned down in Oregon here just lately. I had enough food stored up last for 2 years. Well, guess what? All got burnt. It's gone. There are some things that no matter how smart you are and the rest of that sort of thing, there's always an element of risk. But with some things, there's less risk, and that's what we're looking for. And some things, there's enormous risk. And our fundamental idea on this program is that the paper dollar is inherently risky to an unreasonable degree. You know, we can debate. Some people say, well, I'm going to put my money into tools or farmland or whatever. We're going to tell you to talk about gold and silver and whatever. But whatever you get out of this, you have to get the idea this is not a good time to be stuffing your mattress full of paper dollars. There's just not good sense that I'm able to see. I am going to sit here, and that will be my opinion until I see some extraordinary evidence to the contrary. And I don't expect to see it. I don't think that evidence is even possible. So the point is, if you've got paper dollars, you are assuming a certain amount of risk. And from my perspective, it's an unreasonable risk, and you would be well advised to take whatever excess paper dollars you've got and put them into something that will retain value and perhaps even appreciate in price over the course of the next months and years. And it's hard to point to an alternative to gold or silver that has as many advantages, is as likely to certainly hold value and arguably appreciate in price.
And what's difficult, Alf, I believe for so many, people are being bombarded with various types of announcements, strategies, investment strategies on the internet. I mean, I get hundreds of them a day. I can't tell you how many I get by mail. All with the premise of safety. Many of them have connections to gold, whether they be mining shares, whether they're certificates in various places around the world, whether it's online, and I believe people are really confused. And I'm not saying that there these other alternatives are bad, but for a lot of folks, they're not what they're led to believe they are. And so I believe people become very confused on the various promotions. And I always encourage folks, hey, if you come across something and you're I'll tell you the truth. I'll view it. I'll study it. And you can still come to your own conclusion. We can bring it on the radio program and we can discuss it. But here's some interesting news, Al. We have a couple of economic reports came out today. Orders for long-lasting U.S. factory goods fell, and they fell sharply last month. They used commercial aircraft. That area plummeted. And business spent less on computers and electrical equipment. Orders for durable goods plunged 7.3% in July, and that has been the steepest drop in nearly a year.
Orders for durable goods.
Durable goods.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's commercial aircraft, business computers, but it's refrigerators, stoves, things that will last at least 3 years. So when you look at that type of on a consumer level, it just goes to show the consumer is not doing very good out there. And of course, it also shows that the drop suggests that manufacturing is continuing to struggle.
An article here from Breitbart News. And they report on economic indicators, and they reported that in the last third month of July, Gallup measured a sharp spike in unemployment. Actually, in the last 30 days, Gallup polls measured a sharp spike in unemployment from 7.7% to 8.9%. If Gallup is right, unemployment rose 1.2% in the last 30 days. That's a significant jump. I mean, the government, they fool around with 7.2, 7.3. They move a tenth of a percent. To see this move over 1% in 1 month is significant. According to, again, Gallup, unemployment's up 1.2% in the last 30 days. Friday, the Commerce Department released another startling and unexpected statistic. Unexpected. New home sales collapsed in July by a full 13.4%. According to the Associated Press, this is a nine-month low. The rise in interest rates has also resulted in a decrease in mortgage applications. This isn't the only bad news coming out of July. Only 162,000 jobs were created during the entire month, most of them part-time. I don't recall clearly, but I think they need something like a 500,000 jobs a month to be created just to kind of hold things where they are for stability, and they're creating 162,000 part-time jobs, which is not enough. Thursday, jobless claims rose by 13,000 over the previous week. There was good news in July, however. Existing home sales. Now, what they reported is that new home sales collapsed by a full 13.4% in the month of July. Existing home sales rose to their highest level since 2009. Unfortunately, no one's able to is put to work building, landscaping, selling, and manufacturing materials for a home that already exists. And they're right about that. People are buying existing homes. They're not buying new homes. There's not the result. We are not causing a rise in employment. This is consistent with the reports you're talking about, with durable goods falling, the demand for durable goods diminishing, and you had a couple other statistics in there. And it seems like it's just now popping in the month of July. This does not bode well for the economy. We can hope that these are a temporary blip, and that the downturn that they suggest is temporary, and the numbers, who knows, they're going to bounce back up in for August when they get all the numbers for August and they report them. Oh yeah, well, July was just a little bump in the road, but now we're back and we're okay. Maybe so. We can hope something like that takes place, but I don't think that's what's going to happen. I have to look at this, and not because it pleases me, not that I care to think so, but I think we're getting close to something very serious happening in this country. I think we are within a few months. I think the fourth quarter of this year is going to be, I think it's going to be painful. I can't say that it'll be painful in the fourth quarter, but it will introduce the pain in a way that will be hard to deny and hard to avoid, evade. You're going to sit back and say, uh-oh, we got some real trouble. I think we're going to see it with a certain amount of clarity in the fourth quarter of this year. If there's any truth to that speculation, We'll watch and see. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. But if I'm right, if we are really headed into as much trouble as I anticipate at this moment, then it's incumbent on you and me and everyone else to get prepared. We talk about this on the program on a regular basis. And one of the things you have to do is you got, in my opinion, get as far away from paper dollars as you can. If and when this thing goes south, I just can't. I have no confidence in the paper dollar. I have no confidence in the banks. I have no confidence in a world that believes in bail-ins, where the bank gets into trouble, and so they take the money from the depositors in order to keep the bank alive, and they give the depositors shares in the bank. I think the banks are becoming riskier. And if you want to keep your money in a bank, I won't say it's a terrible idea, but I don't think it's as safe as it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. I think it's less safe. If you want to keep your wealth stored in a form of paper dollars, I can't tell you absolutely not to do it, but I think it's certainly a much riskier investment media, savings media, than was true 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. We're close to something here, folks, and maybe we get to it and maybe we don't, but we are close. This is like being on the Titanic and something hits the ship. And maybe it's an iceberg that's got a hole in the side of the ship, and maybe it was just something big in the water and we're just going to keep on steaming through. But it is a good idea to get your life preserver, get it close to hand. If you don't need it, you can always put it back, you know? But for the moment, pull it out of the container, maybe put on your life preserver just in case, get ready. And if it doesn't happen, fine, you can put it back in the box later on. You don't have to worry about it. But for me, it looks like it's getting close. You folks are going to have to use your own judgment. You're going to have to make up your own minds. But you have to recognize there is reason. There's credible reason to think that maybe we're within 3, 4, 5, 6 months of something dramatic happening that won't be fun. So,
you know, Al, I've been told many times I'm the voice of reason. Both you and I, we've been around for a while, and there have been so many red alerts and red flags and things that just didn't hold true. However, and there's one circulating the internet now. And when I first saw it, and I still don't, you know, didn't pay any attention to it, and I don't bring my concerns based on that one video, because I could tear that video up and put all kinds of doubt on the information that they provide. But I take a different look, and I really think that when I look to and I look and do my understanding and my own research, I have come to the conclusion, I agree with you, Al, and I think what you said is right on. I think we're close to something. Something is happening. We see signs. We see the heat up in the Middle East. That's not by accident, folks. There's a lot of things going on that I really don't hear much discussions on. They've been setting up over there into Syria for a while now. How much have you heard of Egypt? I mean, they're just out of the news overnight. Everyone is concentrating on Syria. That is not all by accident. That is all by design. I think you have things that are coming. We have our debt ceiling and our debt that has to be addressed. There's just all of these things are coming together at the same time. All the lies that they have given to us on how great the recovery is, they're all lies. And this is what I base my analysis on and my final conclusion of we're close. I hope by February, it would be nice to say not much happened.
Well, it's I hope coming. That's what we get to. I hope that's what
too.
We get to, but it just doesn't seem like
it
that. There's
seem
just
that way.
It's like that perfect storm, that movie, The Perfect Storm, where a number of things come together at the same time and they create something extraordinary. We're looking at those sort of circumstances right now. We're looking with the perfect storm is not here, but the components are close and they're almost lining up where all of a sudden, bang, we could see a terrible problem. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back shortly. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Interesting day. Gold broke the $1,400 barrier today. We'll see if it holds up for the best for the rest of the day, for the rest of the week. We'll watch and see what happens. But it's certainly a good sign for anyone who has been investing in gold, who is interested in gold. And in the last month, the price of gold appears to be rising significantly. Melody?
Silver has been doing...
Silver
has been doing very well.
Yeah.
We were running that special. I mean, that was a steal on that special. It was a good deal. We got a question coming in. If communications are cut and all commerce must be done locally for some time, what can gold and silver holders do to trade their metals for good locally if they have to? What I tell my clients, Al, is you'll always want to sell back to the dealer first. That is, and if you can hold off, if it's going to be some sort of a short disruption in services, just do as little as possible. 90% is wonderful for any type of purchasing in a situation like that. I remember out during the gas line.
You mean 90% silver?
90% silver.
Yeah.
Quarters, dimes, 50-cent pieces. Back in the 70s during the gas lines, I remember there was a gas station in Arizona. They had a sign that if you paid with pre-64 coinage, you would receive, I can't remember the percentage, a 10 to 20% discount.
I thought they'd give you pre-64 gasoline.
You think? You think? Well, it wasn't that expensive back in 1970. In the early 70s, gasoline wasn't that much, maybe 50 cents. But commerce continues. People adjust, and people will acclimate to the situation. And that's why it is important to have and to be diversified into smaller items so that you can use it where either you can take it to the store in an extreme emergency, like your 90%, you can still spend it at the store. You don't want to. You want to sell it for the silver first. But if you didn't eat for 3 days and you needed a sandwich, I think you could buy some sort of a sandwich, you would do that. So your small gold pieces, but the important part, I believe, is to know your local farmers.
Know them or be prepared to grow your own food or have a supply of food that's already stored up.
Exactly.
I mean, part of the question, if communications are cut and all commerce must be done locally for some time, what can gold and silver holder do to trade their metals for goods locally if they have to? There'll always be somebody to take your gold, but they might not give you a very good deal on it. The solution to the problem is to be prepared to weather, an emergency period where you can get through and you don't have to trade your gold and silver.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? You need, and this is part of your survival strategy. You got things. If you're going to be caught with nothing in the pantry, you're going to have a problem. If the grocery store is shut down, it's not going to make a lot of difference how much gold you have until someone starts bringing some food in, or a neighbor who has excess and you can buy some from them or whatever. But it's sensible. This is the program is financial survival, but it does involve all of your survival in these circumstances, in the economy, the world we live in, the way things are. You have to be sensible, and you have to be prepared as best you can. I see we've got, it says, don't forget Rick today.
No, that's...
Well, I forgot.
Oh, no. That has nothing to do with you.
Uh-huh.
Here's an interesting article. I don't know what this means, Al. You're in Dallas. Maybe you can figure this one out. We talk about oil a lot. Oil Field Services Company, Baker Hughes, says the number of rigs actively exploring for oil and natural gas in the U.S. dropped 15 this week to 1,776. The Houston-based company said in its weekly report Friday that 1,382 rigs were exploring for oil and 387. Seven were listed as miscellaneous. But a year ago, there were over close to 1,900 active rigs. They shut down that many rigs in a year. Of the major oil and gas producing states, California lost 5 rigs, Colorado dropped 4, Louisiana, North Dakota, and Utah each decreased by 3, Ohio and Wyoming each dropped 2, West Virginia lost 1. The U.S. rig count peaked at over 4,500 in 1981, and actually bottomed at 488 in 1999. But so we've actually increased from 1999, but we saw a significant decrease in a year.
Well, but why would that happen? And the answer is,
demand.
I mean, one of the answers is that they don't anticipate a significant increase in demand for crude oil in the near future. There's no point to finding crude oil if you can't sell it. There's got to be a demand. That would suggest they are anticipating that the economy is going to decline further. The other the flip side on that, the other way of looking at it, is they realize there are enough rigs out there right now. They've found all the oil they're likely to need. The supply is adequate for the next several years, and therefore there's no point to spending money to drill holes in the ground if they're not going to do you any good. From my perspective, it reflects either they anticipate the supply is adequate or they anticipate that the demand is going to diminish, and therefore, you know, no point having them. I don't see as cause for alarm, per se.
Mm-mm.
Certainly not about the oil industry, but it does indicate something about the economy. Either way you look at it, they don't expect demand to increase for sure, and they may expect that the demand is going to decrease in the foreseeable future, which is consistent with what we talked about earlier in the program about the possibility of a significant downturn in the economy that might become apparent and undeniable as early as fourth quarter of this year.
Also, what I found interesting, you're right, I think you're right about the economy, but supposedly our exports of gas and oil, I mean, that's supposed to be our biggest export now. It's past everything. So you're right about the economy, but also world demand.
Yeah.
I mean, if it has cut back, I mean, this all transpired after 2008 to where we really began exporting as much gas and oil as we have. It shows you what the world economies are doing.
Well, it's just more evidence that mm-hmm. we're not hitting on all eight cylinders, and we're not likely to in the foreseeable future. And part of the reason for that, here in America, we talked about this on Friday, is because there's nothing significant taking place to increase the wages of average Americans. Prices are going up, but wages are not rising proportionally. In the past, we had inflation that drove prices up at times, but when it did, it also drove wages up. And if the price of groceries increased by 20%, your wages would probably increase by 20%. And it wound up balancing out where, you know, more or less, you might be annoyed by inflation, but you wouldn't be hurt by inflation. Today, it's a different story. Prices are going up, but your wages are staying the same or perhaps even falling. Now you're being squeezed from both ends. You have less money to spend and prices are rising. It's a formula for a reduced standard of living, and it can't do the economy any good. And it's surprising to me that no one, including Obama and the Republicans, I can't say no one. It may be that there are politicians that talk about this, but I'm not aware of them. All right? There is no significant political effort talking about raising American wages. And if that's the case, consumer economy has to die. If you folks have less and less money to spend, you can't continue to shop till you drop. The whole idea of a consumer-based economy has to come to an end. Where are we going from there? We'll go from the consumer-based economy to the producer-based economy. And if you are not able to produce something, you're going to have a very difficult time. You've got to be able to make a positive contribution. And if you can't in a producer-based economy, you're going to live under some very humble circumstances.
And those humble circumstances are coming to you soon if the financial system collapses this fall or has some sort of major pullback, which I believe is going to happen.
Well, and if it does, the big danger, of course, the real... You know, we had a question, what happens if commerce shuts down and telecommunications go bad and the rest of that sort of thing? The worst case scenario is always, by definition, the least likely scenario.
Mm-hmm.
All right? It's the worst, okay? It's also the least likely. More than likely, we see a problem. It doesn't go to the worst case scenario. But it still is difficult. It's still unpleasant, and those people who are prepared for it may do well, and those who are unprepared will tend to do badly. In the kind of circumstance we're talking about, and we are talking really ultimately, we're talking about a national depression. We're certainly talking about a more severe recession and perhaps a national depression. Under those circumstances, will the government allow the paper dollar to survive? And there's a good chance that they won't.
It's not a matter of whether they will let it survive. It won't survive, whether they want it to or not. It's not going to.
Well, there's,
I don't think
that's the danger. That's the danger.
They're not going to have control over it.
They may or they may not. I don't know who's going to have control, but I'm just saying if the dollar, if we go into a period of deflation and prices fall, the national debt effectively increases in term as measured in purchasing power. The government won't stand for it, in my opinion. They'll pull the plug on the dollar even if they could hold it together or it could survive on its own. I can't tell you that's God's truth, but I think that's a high probability. And this is where we get into that danger of storing your wealth in any form of paper. That's what we're trying to tell you on this program, and I've been trying to talk about it for 5 years here. The debt is too big. The debt can't be paid. It means the debt must. It means it won't be paid. It means the paper debt instruments will turn out, in large measure, to be worthless. Those of you who store your wealth in those paper debt instruments are in jeopardy. You are in peril, in my opinion, and the same thing goes with your paper dollars. This whole paper world, this whole idea of digital currency and paper currency and debt-based monetary instruments, there's a certain insanity behind it. Your dollar is a debt-based monetary instrument. We treat debts as if they were assets. And in the final analysis, it's a kind of craziness. It's a delusion. It's an insanity. And sooner or later, we're going to run out of meds. And when we do, all of a sudden, people are going to wake up and say, "What? What? I've been saving my wealth in a form of paper?" I guarantee the day's coming. I can't say it's going to be in the next 6 months. There's a chance it'll happen in the next 6 months. I can't say it will. But it's going to happen, and that's what we warn you, or that's what I'm warning you about on a regular basis on the programs. Why you want to get into something other than paper?
And let me refresh everyone's memory about Friday and the NASDAQ being down for how many hours?
Three.
You know, the stock market should. Yeah, and wouldn't it have been nice if you needed to liquidate something at that point in time? And sure, it came back up. Yeah, sure, it functioned. Yeah, it functions today. But again, we're looking at that risk scenario. And if people believe that the system is going to collapse to where you're thinking about bartering with your neighbors, do you really think you're going to be able to sell your paper investments? I wouldn't think so.
No, absolutely not. That, and the point behind it is in a difficult situation, you will be in a difficult situation. No one has a perfect solution for the possible problems you're going to face in a difficult situation. Nevertheless, there are some suggestions and recommendations that make sense. There's a high probability that you're going to need guns, you're going to need bullets, you're going to need food, you're going to need gold, you're going to need silver. High probability. It may be you're going to need a life preserver. We don't think most of you are going to need a life preserver because we don't expect you to be at sea, but you might be. Now, I'm not recommending, but I'm not saying that you shouldn't get life preservers. I'm not saying you should, but I'm saying that most people won't be at sea. It won't be important to most people, but guns, bullets, food, water, gold, silver, these are recommendations that simply, you know, everybody in the audience understands there's a certain amount of common sense. Common sense. Common sense. Protect yourself.
You know, we ran an article put out with the blog by Survival Gear Guru. For those who haven't signed up with our newsletter, you should go to our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, sign up. Again, this was on a blog, The 8 Deadly Enemies of Survival. And they broke it down: fear, complacency, hunger, mm-hmm. thirst, temperature, 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, your body, pain, fatigue, boredom. And you could even put those 8 deadly sins to your finances, too. We've seen that. It's a great little blog that someone put out, and I read it. So, you know, sign up and look at this week's newsletter. It's very important. But complacency, it's lots of
time. If you're going to be complacent now, there will be a moment in the foreseeable future when you will not be complacent. You will not be able to afford complacency. It may be difficult for everyone, but it will be particularly difficult for people that are totally unprepared. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk here at Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. And of course, we suggest that you are likely to need some gold and silver, perhaps more so than ever before in the course of the next, who knows, before the end of this year. Could turn out that way. Not absolutely. But there's reason to believe. You look at the leaves and the breeze, they seem to be blowing in a particular direction. We don't have proof, but we have evidence that suggests that we are getting very close to a very difficult situation. What else do we have, Melody?
Don't ignore the clear signs of danger. I mean, that's what it's all about. And if you're confused, call me. I'll help you. And, you know, if you come across prices, we have some of the lowest prices in the country. For what we do, for the number of programs that we support, my prices are lower than anybody's in this country. I defy anybody to match my prices and do what I do. And as far as the support and re-education and money that comes back into your education. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Well, Washington made it official. Secretary of State John Kerry came out today and said that the use of chemical weapons in attacks on civilians in Syria last week was undeniable. And the big question is who really did it, but that's another segment of the program. And that the administration would hold the Syrian government accountable.
That's kind of like we held the Afghan government accountable for 9/11. We decided to invade Afghanistan because a couple of people had visited Afghanistan before 9/11, and therefore that entitled us to bomb them. Mm-hmm. If you catch my drift on this, the way the government operates is it's hard to know. Who is in the audience who has confidence? If our government says Syria used chemical weapons in Syria, the Syrian government used chemical weapons, how many of you people have significant confidence that the report is necessarily true? I don't doubt chemical weapons have been used. There's no question about that. But who actually used them? There's the question. You have to wonder if the Syrian government would be foolish enough to use chemical weapons within Syria. And part of the reason for that is that they have to know it's going to be detected, it's going to be discovered. Are they so desperate or so stupid that they're going to do something that would certainly cost them a certain measure of sympathy, support from whatever? Anybody who's sympathetic to Syria, anyone who supports Syria, if they're going to use chemical weapons, that support, that sympathy is going to be diminished. Was it worth it? How many adversaries, how many enemies did they get with their chemical weapons? Is it enough to compensate? And the point that I'm groping for is the idea that it is at least surprising that Syria would choose to use chemical weapons. Nothing's impossible. Might be exactly what happened. But our own government's track record with 9/11 and the Murrah building and Afghanistan and Iraq and threats with Iran and Libya. Do we really have straight information? And it's hard to know. And maybe we do and maybe we don't. But government is increasingly like the little boy who cried wolf and wolf and wolf and wolf. And finally, you just get to a point where you just don't believe the kid.
Huh? Well, you know, the UN has come out today. And, of course, Russia says there's no evidence. The UN says that the evidence may have been destroyed. The White House was moving closer to a military response in consultation with America's allies. The allies that really seem to be going is the Brits. England seems to be gung-ho on it, but Russia, we certainly know Russia's feelings on it, and Iran. So, you know, see a nice little connection between Russia and Iran, but it's...
The whole thing is... You know, this is much of this leads you to ask, what are we doing over there? Does anyone know? Some of this stuff is so corrupt, so murky, so incomprehensible that a sensible government would simply stay out of it. What is our compulsion to meddle in the affairs of every jackass on the face of this earth? Why not just leave them to their own devices? It's like picking up the tar baby. It's like swimming in a septic tank. You can't do it without getting dirty. You understand? And what is our motivation? Why do we even care about Syria? We aren't exporting, we're not importing much oil from the Middle East anymore. It's not critical to us on that basis. It might be critical to Israel's welfare. I get that. But it doesn't have a direct impact, I'm able to understand, on the United States of America. If they want to fight, let them fight. And which side is on our side? That's what I'd like to know. We've got two sides going at it in Syria. I'd like to know which one of those sides we can count on as an ally in the event that there's a civil war and one side defeats the other. Which side shall we support? Al-Qaeda is one side. And the Syrian president Assad is the other one. Neither one of them are fans of the United States. What are we doing there?
Huh? Also, Al, doesn't Kerry need approval through Congress before any actions can be taken?
Are you saying
they're all on vacation? And they're all on vacation? So the timing, hey, let's get this stuff done before they get back. Because there was already warnings prior to them leaving, I believe, that anything that he would do without their approval. But we also know that there is a commander-in-chief that kind of goes along with that plan, doing things without anyone's approval. So anyway.
Well, it happens that way on a regular basis. And if they don't need anyone's approval, they don't need my approval. I give you that. And I don't approve. All right? I'd say just stay out of them. Stay out of them. We don't have to involve ourselves in every septic tank that exists anywhere on the face of the earth. Let's just stay out of other people's septic tanks. What do you say? I think the world would be a better place. Certainly the United States of America would be better. You know, they can sit back and they will try to argue that they have American interests. They're American interests in Syria. Well, yeah, but are they interests of the rank and file middle class of the American people? Or are they interests in that are held by major corporations, multinational corporations? Is it in the best interest of the vast majority of the American people to engage in some problem in Syria? Or is it in the best interest of a small minority of super rich who have commercial interests in Syria that they want protected by our government? Whose interests are we going to support and maintain in Syria? And I don't know. But I cannot understand. What is my interest in Syria? Does anyone know? Can you tell me what my interest in, why should I be interested in spending money to go to Syria to bomb some people or shoot them or whatever? Why is that in my interest? I'd like someone to explain it to me so I could understand what's going on here, because I don't. Yeah. I don't say Syria hasn't done anything to me. Might have done something to some billionaires or trillionaires or whatever, but it hasn't done anything to me. I don't get it. So here's another one from Egypt. This is a comment on Egypt from the New York Times. Egypt military enlists religion to quell ranks. That's the headline. The Egyptian military has enlisted Muslim scholars in a propaganda campaign to persuade soldiers and policemen that they have a religious duty to obey orders to use deadly force against supporters of the ousted president, Mohamed Morsi. They're saying they are using clergymen, the Egyptian military, generals and so on. They're worried about insubordination in the ranks. And therefore, they have enlisted Muslim scholars. How do you enlist a Muslim scholar, Melody, to encourage people to follow orders to kill Muslims?
Why don't you tell us?
You bribe them. You give them a stack of Egyptian dollars or whatever they use for currency over there. It's a matter of bribery. What legitimate Muslim scholar would encourage the military to shoot Muslims? You know, you bribe them. But in any case, they've enlisted Muslim scholars in a propaganda campaign, persuade soldiers and policemen. They have a religious duty to obey orders to use deadly force against supporters of the ousted president, Mohamed Morsi, and that means the Muslim Brotherhood. They have a religious duty. You Muslims have a religious duty to shoot these Muslims over here. They have a problem. This is evidence of a holy war that is emerging in the Middle East. And it's the sort of, we are seeing evidence not just in Egypt. We're seeing evidence of this in other parts of the Middle East where the Shiites and the Sunnis are beginning to go at each other. The Muslims are on the verge of something like a civil war, where Shiites may fight against Sunnis. And they may get They may become so entangled in their own civil war that they don't have time to fight the Christians or the Jews. They may have to just say, well, we'll get to you Christians and Jews later, but right now I'm going to get those Sunnis. And the Sunnis are going to say, yeah, but first we're going to get the Shiites. All of which points to more instability in the Middle East. All of which points to higher prices for crude oil. And a lot of it points to further loss in the dollar's status as the world's petrocurrency. We've explained this in the past and won't have time to do the whole explanation here again, but after 1971, prior to 1971, the dollar was still backed by gold if the dollars were held by foreign countries. You couldn't exchange your dollars for gold, but foreign countries could. Until Nixon closed the gold window in 71, they cut deals with Saudi Arabia and OPEC afterwards, where OPEC and Saudi Arabia agreed that they would only sell crude oil for U.S. dollars. And the result was the dollar became a petrodollar in that it was effectively backed by petroleum rather than by gold. This gave the dollar, which was a pure fiat currency after 1971, this gave the dollar a certain legitimacy and value that it did not have intrinsically. This held together until the 2000s. Saddam Hussein started selling Iraqi crude for euros, and the dollar suffered a dramatic loss in value. Now, they've held it together to some degree since, despite that loss, got down to where they lost about a third of the dollar's value, and then they've more or less held it at that range in the U.S. dollar index. But will we be able to sustain the dollar's value on the U.S. dollar index if the Middle East becomes increasingly unstable and people and governments within the Middle East that are producing oil, those governments are increasingly inclined to sell for currencies other than the dollar? In the midst of the instability, will the dollar become less predominant? It does not. It's not the only game in town anymore. It was up until 2000 or thereabouts. Now it's the biggest game in town. But will it lose? And if it does, can we expect that the paper dollar is going to lose value? If it does, we'll see more inflation. We'll see the prices of everything, including gold and silver, increase significantly. Will it happen? Will that cause and effect take place? We don't know that. But it's another one of the leaves in the breeze, another one of the possibilities. But you look at it and you're saying, you know, this is shaping up like that perfect storm. We have a number of events, and the Middle East is one of them. Middle Eastern instability, not just Syria, but Syria and Egypt and maybe Saudi Arabia. God knows where it's all going, but it's going up for grabs. It does not bode well for a dollar whose value is substantially based on petroleum or has been for the last, 40 years or more. In any case, folks, we'll answer some of those questions tomorrow when we return. We'll consider them again. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom at Financial Survival. I want to thank all of you for listening. We'll be back mañana. In the meantime, and good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.